Hello and welcome Behind the Marquee, the podcast where we talk about what's going on at the Michigan and State Theater Special Quarantine Edition. My name is Nick Alderink and I am the Programming and Media Coordinator for the Michigan and State Theater. And I am joined via phone call by two people who also work at the Michigan. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello, my name is Mackenzie Peacock and I am the Events and Operations Manager for the Art House Convergence.
Everybody, I'm Jay Jasinski, and I'm the Digital Marketing Coordinator for the Michigan Foundation.
Thank you both for joining me on this weird edition of the podcast. How's it going in quarantine life, both of you?
Yeah, I have to say, it's really hard to fit you in. I've got a really packed schedule, so I appreciate you picking this time. But I don't know, I think things are okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still able to work luckily and mm-hmm. put together some cool programming for audiences, and I have Wi-Fi and toilet paper and ER on Hulu, so I'm great.
Jay, what about you?
Yeah, I mean it's I think it's definitely key to make sure you still get outside in some capacity. Whenever I kind of do feel cabin fever and I go for a walk, and I feel fine. So
yeah,
it's all about in quarantine life. Gotta balance the time inside and time out walking, and you'll be all right.
So Jay, Mackenzie,
I was just gonna say I've replaced all my social interactions with Animal Crossing, which just came out last Friday, and now that I have a Nintendo Switch, so I went and visited some friends, you know, planted some fruit, went for a walk, so I'm yeah.
So
life's normal.
So for the general public, Jay, you are pretty much the voice of the Michigan and State Theater right now. How is it looking on social media? How's everyone holding up?
It's holding up well. We have, I hate to admit this, but as far as my work goes, it's been quite fun. I mean, everyone's stuck inside on social media, so we've been great interactions. Our community has been very active with answering all the questions I pose, even when they're kind of silly. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning a lot about our audience and what kind of movies they like. You know, the Michigan Theater, just what it represents and to the community is just this place that people can gather and talk about movies. And I think we've kind of just moved that over to the Facebook for now. And, I look forward to the day that people aren't commenting on my Facebook post because they're too busy seeing movies in our theater. But until then, it's been really fun to see everybody engaging with our stuff.
Yeah. So one thing that the main thing that we're going to be talking about in this podcast episode is the classic movies March Madness bracket that we've been sharing via social media. Jay, why don't you tell us how this came about, how this started?
Yeah. Well, at the beginning of all this, I was kind of at basically, so my what I usually post on social media is obviously what we're promoting, what we're showing for the day, what we're showing this weekend, and that takes up 80-90% of my calendar, my social media calendar. So having all that canceled just so abruptly, kind of it was a wild west for me out there. So I just was kind of, as us clever social media marketing people do, just kind of throwing stuff at and seeing what sticks. And I just, for whatever reason, I was having like just terrible anxiety that day, and it just seemed like this was the day that we closed and everything was so uncertain. And for whatever reason, I was like, I'm going to just make a post where I just ask people if they like Casablanca or Citizen Kane more. And it got like 100 comments. Yeah. So people wanted that. And then Nick, you had the bright idea to take it to a bracket and make this have this replace sports for people. This is we're coming through.
Yeah,
for people.
Yeah. Without March Madness sports right now, we need. I just thought that we needed something like this. So I went to the AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movies list, and I picked out 32 films. I categorized them from pre-1960 to post-1960, and just started using the AFI's list to seed them. And here we got, I was really pleasantly, it wasn't intentional. Again, I used the AFI list to seed these, but we got some like really interesting first round mashups that just by happenstance we got, you know, Jimmy Stewart versus, or we got Vertigo versus It's a Wonderful Life, a Jimmy Stewart matchup in the first round, you know. Then we have Buster Keaton versus Charlie Chaplin coming up with it, which is going to be really interesting. Have either of you filled out your own bracket?
Yes, I have my own picks. It's kind of hard, like with any bracket, you almost want to do two based on what I think is the better movie and what I think audiences will pick. Yeah. Like, do I think everyone's going to go E.T. number one? Yeah. Probably not. Do I want to put E.T. number one? Yeah, kind of. I do. So it's just kind of want to do. That's what I do with sports brackets too. Sometimes.
That's definitely what I did. As I made two brackets, my personal bracket and my predictions bracket. So let's talk about Final Four, I guess, to start out. What do you all have? What are you predicting is going to be the Final Four?
I think the Star Wars versus Citizen Kane in the 60. Oh, no, pre-960. I'm thinking Final. I'm sorry, I'm reading this wrong. I'm not a sports guy.
I think that's the beauty of this bracket as well, is that for a lot of people, this may be their big chance to join the excitement in filling out a Final Four bracket that don't normally do so. That's at least what Patty said.
I got to figure it out. So I'm going with my original. I want to see a rematch. So I definitely want to see Citizen Kane and Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
But that would work out, right?
Yeah.
I didn't fill out a bracket going off the cuff.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, I think.
And then I would probably, on the other side, I'm going to go with Star Wars against Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, see, I think there's definitely, sorry, continue. It's really weird that we're doing this where we can see each other talking, so I feel like we're going to be talking over each other a little bit here. What were you saying, Jay?
There's nothing else for me to say about that. Those are just kind of my in-the-moment picks, but I think it might be worth those.
Mine are pretty similar. I also had Citizen Kane and Casablanca, and then I had 2001 Space Odyssey and Godfather Part Two.
On the post 1960, I had The Godfather Part One versus 2001 A Space Odyssey. Yeah, I think The Godfather.
Three very similar picks.
Yeah, I think The Godfather.
No, I would go Part Two over Part One any day.
Yeah, I think my personal. I think The Godfather Part One is better than the Part Two. Just by personal preference, they're both very good movies. Yeah. I think the original one is just a classic. It's a little bit more of a simpler story, I feel like. I think it's just a more enjoyable watch. The Godfather Part Two is just very dark and depressing. But
I saw The Godfather at way too young of an age.
Yeah.
And don't analyze this too much, but I had a massive crush on James Caan as Sonny. So seeing him get mowed down in the first one, I think, kind of scarred
me. That's traumatizing, yeah.
I mean, that's also, one, that's a horrible person for a young child to be attracted to. And also, I was too young anyway. Uh-huh.
But then I think definitely a Casablanca versus Citizen Kane rematch is definitely in the works, unless Vertigo versus Citizen Kane is going to be a tough matchup going into the Elite Eight. I'm really curious how that one's going to turn out. I was very surprised Vertigo won over It's a Wonderful Life, especially for our audience.
I had the same thought. If we have over 1,000 people show up every single year for It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And I can personally name at least two people I know who say that that's their favorite movie of all time. Ever.
I'm one of those people. I'm sitting underneath the It's a Wonderful Life poster as we speak right now, actually, on my wall.
A lot of people, though, I think it's just timing. I think, like, if we were to do this in November, then I think more people would have picked It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, I'm very seasonal. I love holiday movies, Wonderful Life, but I don't love holiday movies outside of the accepted holiday movie watching period. And like the thought of watching A Wonderful Life right now, I would much rather watch Vertigo right now. But like come November, I couldn't imagine watching Vertigo. I think it might just because it won by quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I think that might have had something to do with that.
I didn't. Definitely.
I'll be curious to see if any like list fatigue happens with some of these films. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of times when you see the best movies ever made, it's almost always Citizen Kane and Casablanca.
Yeah.
And I do think Casablanca is a perfect movie. Like full stop. I think it's a perfect movie. But I am curious if like something like Singing in the Rain or Wizard of Oz in that bracket, I feel like they are in that section of pre-1960. I think one of those could be a dark horse.
Definitely, yeah.
Singing in the Rain and Wizard of Oz are both.
I agree. I think Singing in the Rain could possibly have the upset there. I hope we do see some upsets. I'm really rooting for upsets because like we don't want this just to fall in place with just the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way it was structured anyway. So, but I think we will. I mean, the good thing is that people are very, they're putting some thought into it. I can tell. We get a lot of people that post their explanations of why they chose what. So we definitely have an audience that's putting some thought into this. So I guess we'll have to see.
As we're talking right now, Jay, you just gave me the results to Gone with the Wind and Some Like It Hot, which was really, really close. What were the comments people were saying about those two films?
I got, I would say that it was almost like it was not only was it so close, but people's reasonings were pretty much kind of the same. Like, oh, Some Like It Hot is just the classic comedy. And then people were saying, oh, it has to be Gone with the Wind because that is just the classic movie, which is funny because this is a classic film, madness.
Yeah.
So they're all films. But a lot of people were like, oh, no, I have to go with Gone with the Wind because it is the classic film.
Right.
And people were like, well, I have to go with Some Like It Hot because it is the classic comedy. So it's like, I guess when you, it's just kind of funny that that was the reasoning was that they're classic films. Because they're all classic films. Yeah. But I don't know. It's also interesting. You'll see a lot of people choose the same. Because the way we've been doing it on Facebook, is we'll post two mashups at a time. Mm-hmm. So we do a 1960 and post 1960. So you're basically voting on two mashups. And I see a lot of people choose the same movies. So, for instance, people that chose Vertigo also chose Star Wars. And then you'll see the people that chose Apocalypse Now and It's a Wonderful Life. Like it's interesting to see that like somehow even though those are such different films, it just must say something about people's taste in movies. I have no idea, but it seems like people are pretty locked in the two. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like the two answers.
Yeah. I can't wait for that think piece one of you is gonna write.
It's gonna be Nick because I can't wrap my head around it. I've seen it consistently in all the first matchups that people vote overwhelmingly kind of similarly for each matchup. So, mm-hmm. But I can't figure out why.
as Mackenzie was saying, list fatigue, I'm wondering if, or Jay, you were saying, some of these may be based off a season. I wonder if just the general attitude that we all have as movie watchers right now is coming into play as we all might be looking for something that's a little more cheerful and joyful than say Schindler's List, which got crushed by The Godfather Part Two. Which I think it probably should have. Godfather Part Two definitely deserved to win there. But boy, do I not want to watch Schindler's List right now.
Yeah, totally. And I think, that's kind of how I feel with Singing in the Rain coming in to maybe sweep it all.
Yeah.
It's like, I've seen Singing in the Rain like 10 times and I saw it on this list when I was making my bracket. And I was like, oh man, I really want to watch Singing in the Rain right now. Even though there are movies on here that I will openly admit that I have not seen. Mm-hmm. And I still kind of would want to watch Singing in the Rain before I watch any of those.
What's one, say one that you think is the most surprising that you haven't seen?
I've never seen Raging Bull and it's on Netflix and I love De Niro and I love Scorsese and I've never seen it. So it's on my to watch list over the next over this current quarantine.
It's a classic.
Yeah, I know.
I've never seen E.T.
Really?
It never came up in my childhood.
you should have come to my 9th birthday party. We went to the 20th anniversary.
I didn't get invited.
I should say, I guess I haven't seen, or I saw E.T. for the first time maybe 4 years ago, so I can't speak with too much surprise there. But yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was not a movie of my childhood either. Mine?
Oh, I've probably seen the movie 150 times. Like, not kidding.
Some of these movies I'm definitely more familiar with others. I think the only one that I've never seen a minute of, though, is The Grapes of Wrath, 1940. I don't think I've seen it.
I think I watched it for school.
See,
so I don't know if that even, I mean, it counts, but.
I didn't watch it for, I didn't even read the book in school. So it just, that one was never, has not been on my list ever. So I guess I got to check out that one. But
I haven't seen it.
This can be a message to our audience. Don't be afraid to admit that you have not seen some of these
absolutely
movies.
Yeah, it's especially if you're in like film school and stuff like that, you definitely get self-conscious about going like, oh, I've seen Citizen Kane, where I think I'm pretty sure I almost made it through. So I didn't go to film school. I mean, I just got a film studies minor. But I didn't watch Citizen Kane in any of my classes. And just by reading so much about it, and not, like, I felt like I'd seen it. Yeah. I didn't watch it until after. But I could talk the talk. Yeah. I mean, I could have fooled that I'd seen it.
Citizen Kane has so much prestige to it. I was actually very, very charmed, I guess. Maybe charmed isn't the right word, to see people voting for High Noon against Citizen Kane. It was just... people that, you know, Citizen Kane does, I think it's a terrific movie, but it does deserve to be taken down a peg. So just seeing the people with the, I don't use this in a negative sense, the people with the audacity to vote for High Noon over Citizen Kane, I felt, was very charming.
Thank you, people.
Anyways.
Yeah. People wanted to see that. I mean, that would have been a huge upset right off the bat.
Yeah.
It almost, it's like any top seeded team, you know, they get nervous playing the first round. So I think Citizen Kane's going to shake that off.
Yeah.
Not confident. But Sunset Boulevard, that's still strong competition.
Yeah. I'm curious what everyone's like angriest first matchup was or is. Because, like, for me, I mean, I think I would put, like, Apocalypse Now and Star Wars would both go really far for me. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty pissed off about having to do that round one. I'm curious what other people's are.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. The Godfather versus Dr. Strangelove was one I was really pissed about having to vote between. And I think that one was... I guess 28-15, but I saw a similar sentiment of people on social media. Is that what you saw, Jay?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, people that voted, no matter what they voted, they kind of were like, yeah, but I love, you know, the other one. And people were torn for sure, which is good. I like to see that.
Another one.
I would say a matchup. Psycho and To Kill a Mockingbird, just because I love both those movies and they're so different.
Yeah,
They're different genres. They're just completely. That's just so just personally, because I both those movies like are important to me, but for such different reasons.
Yeah.
That I have no idea which one I'll pick for that.
That's a good.
It's also really hard for me to do Raging Bull and Annie Hall because, like I just said, I haven't seen Raging Bull and I hate Woody Allen. Yeah. I don't. I think Annie Hall is an incredibly overrated film.
Yeah.
So I guess Raging Bull by default. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I don't think you'll be making a poor choice. I'll just say that if you pick Raging Bull.
Thank you.
It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, definitely. If we go into, I don't think Annie Hall is surviving the first round against Raging Bull. But if it comes up, if it somehow makes its way to the final four and we get Star Wars versus Annie Hall, because those are two films that were competing for the best picture in '77, and then Annie Hall famously won over it. But that's a good revenge match right there. City Lights versus The General is a really tough first round match. Just somehow the two silent films are competing against each other in the first round. As I said, it's Chaplin versus Buster Keaton. And I'm personally voting The General because Buster Keaton's, he's my guy. But I would like to, I'm interested in seeing how that one turns out. I'm sure Chaplin's going to win out, but that one's hard to say.
What do you think would be the most surprising movie that could actually win this?
Well, if you would have asked me that yesterday, I would have said It's a Wonderful Life. I really thought that one was going to go all the way, at least to the final four, but it couldn't beat Vertigo. But another...
That's your own Duke getting out round one kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah. besides that, I don't know. Yeah, I think, as Mackenzie said, Singing in the Rain might be that. It's, I mean, it's seated number three, but that's kind of a dark horse there.
Yeah,
I agree with that, and I it shouldn't be a surprise if that won, but just given all the other lists that have been made before, but yeah, I'd love to see that one.
Mm-hmm.
Take it.
Same.
So generally, what do you think is not even picking a film pre-1960 versus post-1960? How do you predict the champion to be?
I would say it's going to be a pre-1960 film because they've had more time to kind of marinate in that classic realm of people's minds. Like, right. they films in post-1960 aren't considered classics. It's just like, there's just something about like Casablanca where it's like beyond like what like Psycho could be yet,
right.
I guess, as a classic. That's just my guess. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think just to go against the grain here, I think I'm expecting post 1960 to take it all. I don't know. It's there's a lot more. I see the pre 1960 those films hold more prestige, but the post 1960 hold more nostalgia, I'd say. I think a lot of the films in the post 1960 are. They mean something to our audience, where it's like everyone else on the other side. It's, you know, you look at Casablanca, Citizen Kane, Wizard of Oz, those, they just, you know that they're good. So it'd be tough to, people are going to have to decide between what they think is best in their heart and what film do they honestly think is better? I think that's the true argument here of this bracket.
What movie? Mm-hmm. I was just gonna say, what movie do you think? Just to make it easier, maybe like pre 1960 movie do you think should have been on this?
Oh, that's a good question.
Probably 100, but
What is it missing? When I was looking at the original list, I remember seeing, because originally I made a 64-team bracket, and then we decided that it was just too much to facilitate. And there were a bunch that I was looking at that I was sad to see go, but now I don't remember what those were.
I'm a big, pre-1960?
Yeah.
Is Mildred Pierce on that list? I just watched that movie for the first time in years, 1945, and was.
I don't think it's on here. I don't think it's even on there on the 100 list. I think that something like Ben-Hur is really missing from the list, which is 59. I think. It's another Chaplin title. Maybe like something like The Gold Rush is really missing on here. Maybe West Side Story is another.
Which is post 1960, but
yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, you're right. 61. Yeah.
I think. It Happened One Night was like the first Oscar film, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a great good one.
That's another comedy that really holds up. I watched that for the first time. Again, 3 or 4 years ago, and I was really surprised and pleased of how well the comedy in that film holds up. And then
I would say,
yeah, sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say, I'd say that something like All About Eve would be.
Oh yeah,
would be a good one.
Oh yeah,
it's just such a perfectly written movie, mm-hmm. like just screen chops at least in the acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was kind of surprised to see it, but then I you know, then you see what is on here and you go, okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great example for a movie that would be best viewed on a big screen. I watched that recently for the first time on a plane. and there was like a glare on the screen and I was fighting the whole time. Yeah. And it was not ideal. I wish I had experienced all of that in the Michigan Theater Historic Auditorium.
On the post 1960 side, I was, when I cut it down from 64 to 32 films, I was more frustrated by some of the more recent titles that it cut off. Like there's, because now Schindler's List is the youngest title on here, made in 93, I think it is. But originally, you know, you had like Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring on that in the bracket, and you had Saving Private Ryan and Titanic. Some really interesting in that got Goodfellas. Really, it would have, and Blade Runner, Toy Story. It would have been, I think that's for a different bracket at a different time. I don't want to forget about those, but I would have loved to see, you know, like Blade Runner versus Casablanca.
Well, I mean, and I think one of my favorite movies on the AFI list is 1960, which is The Apartment. I don't know where you'd put that.
Oh, yeah.
As a 1960 movie.
Right, because I put Psycho, which is 1960, in the post-1960 because it feels so much different. It was kind of the turning point of cinema. But The Apartment is, I think I would actually put The Apartment in pre-1960. I don't know the release dates of either of them, but The Apartment is definitely more, it fits in better with the pre-1960 side.
You can make the case either way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, anyways, do we have any closing thoughts before we start wrapping this up from either of you? no pressure.
I don't know. I'm gonna just go on a limb here and say I really think Star Wars is gonna win it all.
That's nice. And in my personal bracket, that's where it ended. But I was not going to say that out loud.
We all knew it. I mean, anyone who's listened to a single episode of this podcast would know that too.
I just said it so you didn't have to, Nick.
Fair enough.
I would just hope everyone's, you know, staying home and staying safe and staying engaged in the theater, and mm-hmm. we'll see them soon.
Yeah, don't forget about us. You know, keep a lookout of films that we're going to be that we're going to make available via streaming. As you're listening to us, you're probably aware that we are going to be, you can essentially, I don't know, you can stream from us from Oscilloscope the film St. Francis, that you can watch on your own. And then, you know, we have Fantastic Fungi on Thursday, which as you're listening to this is probably going to be tomorrow. Keep a look out at us, mishtheater.org/streaming. That's where you can take a look at all of our virtual screenings. So cool. So before we wrap this up, we're going to do it as we always do, talk about our movie magic moments of the week. And this is where we talk about something we've seen recently that we can recommend to you. And as we say, reminded us why we love movies. So I'll kick things off now, I suppose, since I can't really point at anyone to start. Last weekend, I watched all of the extended versions of The Lord of the Rings. And
hell yeah.
It, which was such a delight, especially right now. I needed just some like escapist fantasy to take my mind off something. And I was surprised. I can't really think of a specific moment from any of them that I can, but I'll just say, I was surprised by simultaneously how well those movies hold up and ways that they don't hold up in a way. Because in my head, seeing those movies for the first time, there are this beautiful moment in film history when practical effects and computer effects were simultaneously living together on the screen. Yeah. And you know, you could see the makeup, and yet you see those battles of like people actually running at each other today. It's really not saying it's not, it's still not impressive, but it's more films use computer effects than practical. And the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I feel, is this perfect marriage of those two things. So I was both surprised at how well those effects hold up. And yet there are moments in those movies that you could tell, like, they're just standing against a green screen. It was pretty obvious, like, how some scenes were, as I said, you can kind of like point out those moments where, you know, Gollum and Frodo running, like rolling around on the ground. You could see that Gollum is this person in a green suit, but that didn't take anything away from me. I felt it was charming in many ways to see those flaws in a movie that in my head felt perfect when I was sitting down to watch them. And plus, you know, each of those films are 4 hours long if you watch the extended versions. So if you watch all three, you're essentially watching six films. And just the accomplishment for Peter Jackson to do that, make 3 4-hour movies back to back to back, it was just so impressive. And as we were watching, as The Irishman came out a few months ago, everyone was astonished of how Scorsese can make a 4-hour movie and make it compelling in the ways that he did. But Peter Jackson did that three times, you know, over 10 years ago. So anyways, Lord of the Rings extended versions, that is what I have to recommend. What about you both? Who wants to go first?
I can go.
Please go. Still trying to think of mine. I need you to kill buy some more time for me.
Last Sunday, actually right before the libraries closed, I was lucky to make it in and get some checkouts. I wish I had gotten more because now I'm working my way through them. But I checked out Brazil, the Terry Gilliam dystopian fantasy, and I absolutely loved it. I was blown away by the sets. Speaking of like practical effects, what they do in that movie, and especially with the budget. I look, the budget is not that much, and the way they create this entire world, and you can see how like influential the film was in a lot of like our modern dystopian text versus, you know, books and movies. I just really loved it. It's funny. It's so sad. And it's just, it's a really gorgeous movie.
Yeah. I need to check that one out. Last weekend I watched The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, which was another Gilliam film. It's on the Criterion Channel. And
yeah,
I realized that I haven't seen enough of Terry Gilliam's work. I need to have a better opinion about it. I need to have more research regarding it, but I was feeling like all of his movies are essentially the same thing. They're all about crazy old men going on adventures. And I mean, I off the top of my head, this sounds like The Fisher King, the Don Quixote movie that came out, and, you know, Baron Munchausen.
The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
Yeah. And I need to see more of his work. I need to experience something different from Gilliam.
It's good to do that, because there's definitely a lot of, it's good to have like an understanding, a context of who he is as a person too, because he's a giant, not a good person. Say a word that you might have to bleep. He's not a good person.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a jerk. Yeah. He's a bit of a misogynist. Mm-hmm. And you can absolutely see that in his films. So it's good knowing that going in, and you can have some context about it that might help.
Did he do? Oh no, not right. I am thinking of Brazil. I was gonna say, did he do? He didn't do 12 Monkeys, did he?
He did.
12 Monkeys. Okay, that's one of those movies.
Which is a great movie.
That's one of those movies that I'm embarrassed to say I've never seen.
12 Monkeys is very great. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Brad Pitt performances, which is saying something, because I'm a big Brad Pitt
fan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to check that one out. Hey, Jay, do you got anything yet?
yeah, for whatever reason. Well, I mean, there's some reason to it. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Burt Lancaster fan, and I never seen Pantry. And I watched that Sunday night, and I'm a fan of director Richard Brooks. I've seen in Cold Blood, a couple of his other movies, but I I was blown away. It actually was one of those movies that, not that I wasn't, I mean, I was expecting a lot from it because it's a well-received movie and it's got Burt Lancaster in a very...
Can you repeat the title again? You may have cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry. Elmer Gantry.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Or he's like, or plays a revivalist.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance in that is just, I think it's my favorite movie of his. I mean, it's just, I mean, I love Sweet Smell of Success and all those movies, but it's like, he's so good in this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, this is where you're like, that's why he's just considered one of the best actors of all time. I would just suggest it. It's on the Criterion channel. There's just so much to choose from on there, and I don't really know how I ended up on that one, but I'm so glad that I did. And it's just a really, and also it's funny. I mean, I could see it still being controversial. I mean, even the book's still considered controversial, mm-hmm. but they have this very like warning before the film. That's like, don't let impressionable children see this. Like, we're going to slightly question like their like Christian faith.
Oh, really? See, so, I have not.
I'm just like, please don't come burn the studio down. Like, we're, you know. And it really was like, I mean, they definitely put revivalists into question, but I think it was very well balanced. They showed like the humanity on both. So it wasn't just like a takedown revivalist. It was kind of ambiguous. I mean, he like, it's hard to tell, like if you feel like he's a good guy or if he's just a shyster or it was a good movie. I don't know what else to say. I think there's going to be so many movies to choose from. I don't know why anyone else would pick Elmer Gantry to watch right now. It's so good. It's just so good.
That's a 1960 movie. Where does it fall? Pre-1960 or post-1960 for you?
Definitely pre-1960.
Pre-1960? Okay. I haven't seen it.
Because I don't think it wouldn't be a scandalous post-1960, but pre-1960.
I'll have to check that out. I have an account on the Criterion channel, but I have so many films on the watch list of my account there that I don't know how to go about it. So I'll have to, with your recommendation, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's long, so at least it'll kill some time.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. We have all the time in the world right now. Well, thanks you both for giving me your time to record a podcast. I'm sure the audience loves to hear our voices, and it makes it seem as if we are going about as normal in these very strange times. Jay, McKenzie, anything else to say to our audience? I'm putting you on the spot again.
See you at the movies.
All right, send us an email. I'll still be checking emails, btmpod@gmail.com. And as I said, follow the Michigan and State Theater on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's where you'll hear from Jay. He's posting a lot of great stuff today. That's, of course, where you'll see our classic movie brackets. So give us a shout out, and we'll see you soon at the Michigan and State Theater. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. Thanks again for listening to this special episode of Behind the Marquee. Before I lose you, I'd just like to give one more plug to our email address, btmpod@gmail.com, because in the next couple weeks, I'll be looking for more guests to join me on the podcast, just as Jay and McKenzie did today. In these weird times of isolation, it'd just be nice to hear from you and catch up. We can talk about what you've been watching, how you've been spending your time, and what you've been looking forward to when we can all see each other again. So again, that's btmpod@gmail.com. Thanks again for joining us, Behind the Marquee, and hope to hear from you soon.